I have done a terrible job of welcoming the visitors, so let me stop for just a moment and say so glad to have you with us. I mean, it's good to see. It's a privilege to see all of you here, but if you're visiting with us, we want you to know that you especially are welcome. And if you have any questions about anything I say or we say during the class period tonight or what we do in the brief worship period that follows, please let us know. We'd love to open a Bible with you and talk about it. So then as we left off last time, we really had covered the death of Nadab and Abihu because of the profane fire that they offered. And then we were in the middle of talking about question number 5, which is why did the Lord forbid Aaron, Eleazar, and Ithamar to uncover their heads or to mourn or to leave the tabernacle? And of course, we read the passage there in Leviticus chapter 10 where he says... let me get back there. This is verses 6 and 7. Moses said to Aaron and to Eleazar and Ithamar, his sons, "Do not uncover your heads, nor tear your clothes, lest you die and wrath come upon the people. But let the brethren, your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail the burning which the Lord has kindled. You shall not go out from the tabernacle, lest you die, for the anointing oil of the Lord is upon you." And they did, according to the word of Moses. So this does seem like something of a strange prohibition, given that these fellows have just suffered the death of Aaron, two of his sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, their two brothers. But of course we have looked already at how that the priests were not allowed to defile themselves for the dead unless it was somebody close to them. The high priest couldn't defile himself for anybody. He could not touch a dead body, but the regular priest could, at least if he needed to handle the dead body of a wife, of a brother or sister, of a child, they were allowed to do that. But even in this case, the Lord says, no, you don't. You don't do anything. Don't tear your clothes. Don't mourn. Nothing. So we were talking about why did he prohibit them that way? And I think there are a couple of possibly not mutually exclusive reasons here. It may be that the consecration process was not technically finished. I mean, we were still really in the process of consecrating the priests and consecrating the people. You might say that the consecration period of the priests was technically over, but they were still offering sacrifices for themselves and for the people. He talks about the fact that the anointing oil of the Lord was upon them, and they are not to leave the tabernacle. And, of course, that was part of the consecration process of the priests. But also, I think maybe something that carries a little more weight here is that now that they have undergone this consecration process, here is Aaron the high priest, and here are his two sons, priests of the Lord. They are the representatives of God before the people. And so somewhat like in Ezekiel, when God says, your wife's going to die, and you're not going to mourn, because I need you to present to the people a picture of what this is like for me. The Babylonians are going to ransack my temple. They are going to take the city of Jerusalem captive, and I am not going to mourn. And so I think maybe this is a similar sort of thing. God had just, in his righteousness, judged Nadab and Abihu. And so if Aaron, if Eleazar and Ithamar had begun to wail about that, then they, as the representatives of God before the people, they would be undermining God's righteous judgment. And they could not present they and God had to be a unified front, if I can put it that way. They could not in any way undermine what God just did. Any other thoughts along those lines? Kevin, and then Tony.
A lot of questions regarding why and good reasons or bad reasons go back to one fundamental question, and that is, what is it that makes something right or wrong? And if you start all discussion with that, well, you get to the conclusion that God is what makes something right or wrong. He defines right or wrong. And so if God did that to Nadab and Abihu, he must have been right, and there is no issue with it. There's no problem. God defines.
Yep. God defines right, and if he did it, it is by definition Right, because in God is light and no darkness at all.
I think God made it very clear what his feelings were on this, on this situation when fire came out from the Lord and devoured them. And this was no minor. This was in spectacular fashion. Let not just them, but everybody else know. Behold, I will be glorified. Mm-hmm. I will be sanctified by them who come near me. And so by just what, back to what you said, this is adding on to what you said about undermining Eleazar and Ithamar. If they mourn for them, they would just undermine what God had stated. Are you on their side or are you on my side? Are you on the evil side or righteous side? To make it clear, you know, choose a side.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. Anything else before we move on to question number 6? Well, as we keep reading then in Leviticus 8 through 11, God gives some additional prohibitions. And the second part of my question I had, why, that might be a little bit open-ended, more open-ended than I meant for it, at least at this point. So I will amend that part of the question and say, what reason did God give for those additional prohibitions? So first, what were the prohibitions that he put upon the priests during their service?
They were not to drink wine or intoxicating drink.
Okay.
Lest they die.
Mm-hmm.
And really the reason why was that they would be able to distinguish between the holy and the unholy, between the unclean and clean, in which, you know, alcohol tends to dull the senses, and so they might make a misjudgment in those things. And then also they were forbidden to teach the statutes of the Lord to the people, so they did not need to be, fuzzy in any way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so very good. Yes, they were not to drink any sort of intoxicating drink, as it says, when you go into the tabernacle of meeting, unless you die, because they are responsible for judging between holy and unholy, clean and unclean, and to teach the people. And if they had any sort of anything that made their judgment fuzzy at all, then that was going to be a problem. Now, obviously, there are a few things that are a little bit difficult to nail down about Nadab and Abihu's situation. But I think I can say, given the picture that we have of the Lord in all of the Bible, God is not in the habit of punishing individuals for something they cannot know. Think about Abimelech back in Genesis. Abraham says, well, this Sarah, well, she's my sister. And so he takes her, apparently with the intention of making her a wife or a concubine, and God comes to him in a dream, and this is Genesis 20, verse 6. He's and Abimelech says, well, I didn't know. I didn't know that she, I mean, he told me this is my sister. He didn't say this is my wife. And he said, and God in response says, yes, I know that you did this in the integrity of your heart, for I also withheld you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. We did talk about, well, I guess Stephen, actually, this is one of the classes I was out for. But we talked about the man who was the son of an Israelite woman, but an Egyptian father who blasphemed the Lord. Now, he knew blasphemy was wrong. He may not have known that he would have to pay for with his life, but he knew that blasphemy was wrong. Likewise, the fellow that we have not gotten to yet, but when we talk about the Sabbath, there's a fellow who is who's put to death because he just goes out and gathers sticks on the Sabbath. God had been very clear. Moses had been very clear. You do no work on the Sabbath, even going out and gathering sticks. And so he's put to death. And, of course, nobody thinks that Ananias and Sapphira didn't have any clue that lying was, what, are you kidding me? You mean deception is, that's wrong before the Lord? And so when we see these kind of punishments, it's not, God does not inflict those punishments on people who have no idea what they're doing. So I want to throw that into the mix. And so I think we have to conclude that either Nadab and Abihu knew that what they were doing was wrong, or they should have known. They could have known if they'd taken the moment to think about it. So let's consider then what commandment then did they violate? Because we've got a few options, and I think we can narrow it down. Turn to Exodus chapter 30, and let's read something about the altar of incense. This is when he's saying, this is what you're going to do on the altar of incense. This is Exodus 30, verses 7 through 9. Exodus 30, verses 7 through 9, the Lord says, Aaron shall burn on it, that is the altar of incense, sweet incense every morning when he tends the lamps, he shall burn incense on it. And when Aaron lights the lamps at twilight, he shall burn incense on it, a perpetual incense before the Lord throughout your generations. You shall not offer strange incense on it, or a burnt offering, or a grain offering, nor shall you pour a drink offering. So recall, you know, there are two altars. There's the one that's at the door of the tabernacle, the altar of burnt offering, but then there's this one, the altar of incense, that's right in front of the veil of the Holy of Holies. And he's saying, the one that's outside the sanctuary, that's where you offer the burnt offerings. Don't go putting burnt offerings on this altar of incense. And also, don't offer any different kind of incense, except that the one, I'd have to look back to get the details, but I think they were basically equal parts of certain spices and also salt that was supposed to be in that mix. That's what you offer on this altar of incense, and no other kind of incense. That's the only incense that is holy for the Lord. Now, I don't think this is what they did. I don't think this was their infraction, because he uses the term strange incense here, but over in Leviticus 10, he uses the term strange fire. Well, one that's pretty popular, in fact, one that I basically subscribed to for a number of years, and I'm not sure that it's entirely out of place either, but perhaps they offered incense with fire that they took coals that they took from someplace that they were not supposed to. Here is the instruction. If you turn back to Leviticus, look at Leviticus chapter 16. This is in the midst of all the detail about the Day of Atonement. And on the Day of Atonement, when Aaron offers the bull of the sin offering for himself, he is to go into the tabernacle. And then this is Leviticus 16, verses 12 and 13. He shall take a censer full of burning coals from the fire, burning coals of fire from the altar before the Lord. So this is, the picture I have always had is that the coals come from the altar of burnt offering. But I think what he's saying here is no, these coals are the ones that are already burning on the altar of incense. You go into the tabernacle, you take coals from that altar of incense that's already burning, you put that in your censer, and then you put incense on it, and then as we keep reading there in verse 12, bring it inside the veil. So this is that one time per year that he goes into the Holy of Holies, behind the veil. And he shall put the incense on the fire before the Lord, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is on the testimony, lest he die. So in other words, as I said, take the coals from the altar of incense. Well, they couldn't. I mean, the glory of the Lord is still filling the tabernacle. They could not have gone into the tabernacle. So I don't think that this is what their infraction was. Furthermore, if you just look back at the very first verse of Leviticus 16, it begins this way. Now the Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron when they offered profane fire before the Lord. So this command apparently had not been given yet. The prohibition or the specification about where they're supposed to get the coals from. So I think option three is, not that option two is entirely ruled out. There might be some combination there. But I think option three is probably the most, I find to be the most compelling. And it's simply that they offered incense at a time and a place that God did not tell them to. I think it was Stephen in the last class that said, look, God was very specific about what this consecration process is supposed to look like. And offering incense at that time was not part of it. You're to do this, and you're to do this, and you're to do this. You're to make these offerings. Incense was not there. And so for Nadab and Abihu just to assume that it was okay for them to do this, they, and again, recall the wording of how God puts it, or rather how Moses puts it when he gives us the account back in Leviticus chapter 10, very first verse. Each took his censer and put fire in it, put incense on it, and offered profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. So this was, they were simply doing something that God had not told them to do. And God held them to account with their lives. So for whatever reason, they did this, and that was a failure to respect God's authority. The one who possessed the prerogative, the one who was being worshipped, the failure to respect his authority to demand how he was to be worshipped. And second, too, Stephen, you said something in a lesson here, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, that I think probably enters into the mix here. Maybe you recall from the lesson, I think you just made a brief mention of when Moses went and struck the rock, when God had said, speak to the rock, Moses got in the way of something that God was trying to communicate there. And I think that's probably what's going on here with Nadab and Abihu. They got in the way of the picture, that they spoiled the picture that God was painting. Remember, we've talked about how that Aaron goes in, and he, or the other priests, they go in, they offer incense on the altar of incense, and that smoke wafts up and over the curtain and into the Holy of Holies. Likely, especially when you consider some of the commentary that we have in the Psalms and in Revelation, that's probably representative of the prayers of the faithful gaining access to God. Well, this was not the time to paint that picture. But Nadab and Abihu decided that it was the time. And God said, no, you're getting in the way of the things that I'm trying to communicate here. And so he punishes them for that infraction. Finally, I think it's worth considering. I mean, what would possess them to do something like this? Well, remember, the very last thing that we have before we move into chapter 10 is Aaron has offered the burnt offering on the altar of burnt offering, and then fire comes out from the Lord and consumes that offering. And all of the people fall on their, they shout and they fall on their faces. And so this has been a spectacular display, an awesome display of God's power. Perhaps they were simply gripped with enthusiasm. you can imagine that to be the case. And they thought, well, hey, you know, let's offer some incense. Well, if anything, I think what that passage proves is that enthusiasm is no substitute for obedience. Let's just do what God says, and let's not get caught up in the moment and then act out and do whatever we think's a good idea. Maybe, I think this is something else you mentioned recently, Stephen, that maybe they were drawing on experiences that they had in Egypt. When you get excited about a God, you offer him incense, and maybe God is saying, no, you do not approach me in the same way that you approach pagan gods. But then finally, another possibility here, and I'm ashamed to say that this, it stares you in the face. We've talked about it already this evening, but it's staring you in the face in the verses that follow this very event. In verse 12, in verse 8, why would he mention, why would Moses tell us about what happened with Nadab and Abihu, and then the very strict prohibition, don't you guys mourn, and then the very next thing he says is, don't drink wine or intoxicating drink. Maybe Nadab and Abihu somehow got a hold of some intoxicating drink, and that is what loosened their inhibitions and caused them to have poor judgment about how they were to behave before God. So I've got one more comment before we move into question number 7. But anything anybody would like to add to that? I have to say I see an application for Christians here. What is the very reason that he says you're not to have intoxicating drink when you are on duty as a priest? It impairs your judgment. You have to be able to judge between the holy and the unholy, between the clean and the unclean. When is a Christian off duty? We're supposed to be priests before God. When are we off duty? When is the time that God says, you know what, take a break. You don't have to worry about the holy versus the unholy. I see in this an implicit prohibition that Christians should ever, for recreational reasons, partake in alcohol, because it keeps us from being able to judge between the holy and the unholy. It keeps us from being able to be ready to preach both in season and out of season. All right, number 7. Why did Moses then become angry? So as we finish out chapter 10 here, Moses becomes angry with Eleazar and Ithamar. Why did he become angry, and what explanation did Aaron offer, which did satisfy Moses? Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were supposed to eat one of these sacrifices. So recall, the burnt offering The priests eat no portion of that. The offerer eats no portion of that. The peace offering and the sin offering, though, the priest gets a portion. And this, they had offered a sin offering both for Aaron. The blood went, well, I'm going to hold off on that for just a minute. For Aaron, they did not eat of that one, but the one that they offered for the people, Moses says you were supposed to eat of that one. And so he was unhappy with the fact that they had not done that. Well, what does Aaron say when Moses rebukes them?
First of all, he kind of says, calm down. He says, I don't think you have a whole picture of what's taking place here. And Vincent begins to explain what he had done and why he had done it. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not sure I have a total grasp of what the difference is, mm-hmm. but it's very clear that Moses had assumed something that Aaron says is not the way that he took it to be.
Okay.
That he intended for it.
Okay. Let me point something out right quick. I know in times past I have gotten to Leviticus 10 and verse 17, and he says, why have you not eaten the sin offering in a holy place, since it's most holy and God has given it to you to bear the guilt of the congregation to make atonement before the Lord? See, the blood was not brought inside the holy place. Indeed, you should have eaten it in a holy place as I commanded. I have read that first part in verse 18. See, its blood was not brought inside the holy place, and I assumed that Moses was rebuking them for failing to take the blood into the holy place. But recall what makes the difference as to whether the priest is supposed to eat a portion of the sin offering. It's whether the blood is taken into the holy place. And so if the anointed priest is having to offer a sin offering for himself, he takes the blood into the holy place, and he's not to eat of the sin offering. And if a ruler has sinned, and I think it's ruler, anointed priest, ruler, congregation, and then a commoner, if he has to take the blood of the sin offering for the ruler into the holy place, he's not to eat of it. But the other two, if it's a sin offering for the people, he does not take the blood into the sanctuary, and if it's for a commoner, he does not take the blood into the sanctuary, and they're supposed to eat. So just wanted to throw in that little detail, because I've read it wrong in the past. Did you have something to add to that, Stephen?
Just at a base level, you know, connecting this back to the beginning of the story, and the prohibition against mourning, and for all the externals, that's what this looks like. Is we just don't. You know, there could be an expression of sorrow there, an expression of mourning the loss here, and they've just been told don't do that. And here's Moses saying, you're neglecting a privilege of the priesthood, and an appropriate privilege. Mm-hmm. And if that is in some way connected to that, and I know he doesn't explicitly say that, but there seems to be that accusation there, you know, that you're not partaking what you're supposed to take. What are you doing? And of course, it's another violation, right? You've been commanded to do this. I think the explanation on the other side of that is not we're weeping, but rather it's sort of like we don't deserve this. And so there's an element of we did this out of humility as opposed to arrogance or in disregard to God. It's more of how could we approach the holy God in this way? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, to err in that way, if we can put it that way, it's far more understandable, you know, than the approach that Nadab and Abihu made.
Yeah, and of course that's the difficulty here, right? God was so swift and so sure in his judgment of Nadab and Abihu, but then he seems to accept this. What is the difference? And I think you've hit on it there. I think it's the attitude. Nadab and Abihu, I think we just have to conclude that they were arrogant. They were presumptuous as they approached God in a way that they thought best. And now here is Aaron saying, look what's happened. I'm not sure I can do this. I'm not sure that we are in a fit state to be able to do this. Maybe because of grief, perhaps they felt that the sin was somehow clinging to them, and they weren't sure that they were holy enough to be able to partake of this. But as you say, it was out of humility, not out of presumption.
Well, I might illustrate it like this. If somebody came in and changed the elements of the Lord's Supper, presumptuously, you know, just we're tired of this, we're going to use this other. Well, rightly, they would be censured, you know, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And versus somebody that came in, say, and thought, I just am not in a place where I feel appropriate to take the Lord's Supper. I think that person probably needs to be talked to, and maybe we need to work through that. But I can appreciate where that person's coming from way more than the person who, you know, let's just change all of this with disregard for God's commands. Mm-hmm. Very different attitudes and hearts in those approaches.
Well, I heard somebody put it this way. It's one thing to deprive ourselves of what God has said we can have, which I think is what Aaron and Eleazar and Ithamar were doing in not eating of the sin offering. It's another thing to take what God says we cannot have. And if that sounds familiar, it's because this guy right here said this about 3 years ago in a lesson called Strange Fire. So go find it, June 23rd, 2019. I cheated. I re-listened to that lesson in order to sort of collect some thoughts here. So in case you thought that I'm just that brilliant standing up here and expounding upon all this stuff with great wisdom, standing on the shoulders of giants here. All right, so anything else then? I maybe we've covered all the bases. I don't know if we have sufficiently answered all the possible questions, but anything else before we move on?
I was thinking too, you know, like Steve was saying, their arrogance basis that they're God's priests, created the universe, is told them exactly how they're to worship them. And they now sit there and go, I know better than God. I'm going to give this. And then the people around them see this and go, oh, they get away with this, I can do what I want to do. You know, God says, this is what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And now they are closer than anybody else's to God. They are going to be held accountable. And that's why it says later, you know, we're talking about teachers and stuff, how they are held to a higher standard. These guys
are
very close, and they are held to a very high standard because of what they can do to people around them.
Yeah. So, let me just take that and run with it a bit. We are not left to wonder, is it possible that if the priests misbehave, that Israel might start to take things lightly? That's exactly, I mean, God explicitly makes that condemnation or issues that condemnation of Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas, saying that what you are doing is causing Israel to despise or abhor the offering of the Lord. So really good point there, Jim. Sure.
This was very early on in priesthood.
That's true. I should have said that, and that's good point there.
The second part of that was Ananias and Sapphira. Mm-hmm. Very early on in the days of the church.
Right.
Kind of I'm setting some ground rules here.
Yeah.
And I'm letting you know I'm serious.
We need to nip this in the bud so that nobody gets the wrong idea. Because if he lets it go early, then he's having to clean up messes from then on. Alrighty then. So if nothing else, we'll move into lesson number 8, talking about the various special times or festival days. Or well, it's more than just festival days. We've got some even daily and weekly things. So right quick, as we enter into the lesson, what were the things that the priests were supposed to offer on a daily basis, every single day? Day in and day out. Okay, exactly. And in fact, we are told when they're supposed to offer those things as well. They're supposed to offer one in the morning. This is Numbers 28, verses 3 and 4. The one lamb you shall offer in the morning, the other you shall offer in the evening. And in fact, we'll even see that be tied into some of the other language. When Aaron offers the morning lamb, and then when he goes into the tabernacle to tend to the lamps, that's when he offers the incense. And so this is all tied together, but it's done on a daily basis. We'll see, you probably picked up on this, but we'll see mention of the regular burnt offering or the daily burnt offering. A number of the sacrifices that we will see offered commanded in regard with regard to the Sabbath or the various festival days, it's always said these offerings, this is in addition to the regular daily offering. So all of those, regardless of the day, special day or not, this pair of lambs was offered every single day, one in the morning, one in the evening. Anything else on a given special day was on top of that. What about the Sabbath? So there were, we've talked about the Sabbath some already, but what were the three reasons that God gives for, oh, pardon me. Mm-hmm. Right, I'm sorry. Is it Stan mentioned that, and I didn't repeat it, so my apologies if you didn't all hear that. But yes, each one of these burnt offerings was to have the accompanying grain offering and drink offering to go with it. All right, the Sabbath. I find three reasons that God gives the Sabbath. What did you find there? That wasn't strictly speaking one of the three things that I was thinking of, or at least not. I didn't have it in this particular list. But we'll come back to that in a minute. So you said creation. We'll talk about that some more in a moment.
The servants and the stranger, even the animals.
Yeah. And even you take a rest and give everybody in your house a rest. Exodus 23:12, you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, the son of your female servant and your male, and the stranger rather may be refreshed. Okay? So we've got rest. What else does he tie in there? Okay, a sign. All right. A sign, and then there was one more. Right. So the way I listed these in my notes was rest, reminder, and sign. So it you were supposed to take a rest. This is God basically ordering you divinely, stop working, refresh yourselves. It was to be a sign of the covenant that he had established with them. And then, as you said, it was a reminder that they were brought out of Egypt. We'll say a little bit more about that here in just a moment. Some things were prohibited on the Sabbath. What was prohibited on the Sabbath? Kindling a fire. And then, the one that we typically go to first. Yeah, just work. Yeah, customary work prohibited on the Sabbath. Now, some things that are notably absent, by the way. In Acts chapter 1, we have the mention of a Sabbath day journey. There is no explicit prohibition about how far that you were supposed to travel. That was something that that later generations came up with. Plucking the heads of grain as you just stroll through a field, that was not prohibited on the Sabbath. Healing somebody, that was not prohibited on the Sabbath. In other words, we see people getting uptight about some of these things in the New Testament, and Jesus says, I think you're missing the point here. And so maybe I can illustrate it this way. Is it work or is it not work? If a fellow shells several bushels of nuts so that he can sell them the next day, is that work? Yeah, that's work. Work or not work? If a fellow has a handful of nuts that he cracks and eats as he's talking with his neighbor, is that work? No. In other words, I don't want to say that it's only about intent, but intent plays into it quite a bit. Is this something that you're doing in leisure, or is it something that you're doing because, hey, I've got to get ahead here? And God says, plowing and harvest seasons, I don't care when it is. You take a rest on the Sabbath day. There is something that they were commanded to do on the Sabbath, which we really don't see a lot of mention of in the Old Testament. What did you catch that? And this is Leviticus 23, verse 3. A holy convocation. And so, like I said, we don't see much about that in the Old Testament. I can't tell if they ever really. I mean, maybe it's just one of those things we just sort of assume that they did. We don't have anything saying they did observe it, but we don't have anything saying they didn't. The main way, I guess, that they didn't observe the Sabbath when they were bad about that sort of thing, it seems, was just working. They didn't stop and take a rest, and probably didn't allow their animals and their servants to stop and take a rest. What was the penalty? Mentioned it already. Of course, death, even if you go out and gather sticks. No, you take a rest. The priests were to offer two additional lambs as a burnt offering. And again, this is in addition to the regular burnt offering. It's not clear to me whether, you know, on a given day, he offers one in the morning, one in the evening. Does that mean that on the Sabbath, he offers two in the morning and two in the evening? Do you offer the two at the same time? I don't know. But regardless, they were to offer two additional lambs on the Sabbath in addition to the regular burnt offering. And then what were they supposed to replace in the tabernacle? on the Sabbath day. Yeah, show bread, exactly. So let's talk now, since you brought up creation, let's talk a little bit about the meaning of the Sabbath. We've talked about rest, and I think that we see that the rest was certainly for me as an individual, or any given Hebrew as an individual, but also this was God saying, you need to give even your servants and your animals a break. You don't need to be a taskmaster. Part of the reason that I brought you out of Egypt was to give you rest. And so this ought to help you to remember what things were like in Egypt and how much better you have it under God. And the fact, as we've mentioned already, that this was supposed to be a reminder that they did enjoy deliverance from bondage. Now, you said creation, Tony. I think it's interesting that there is no reason for us to have a 7-day week. There's nothing about the movement of celestial bodies. There's nothing about the rotation of the earth. Nothing. The only reason to have a 7-day week is because God, in the beginning, established it as 7 days. Even a month is 29 and a half days. You know, you can't even divide that by four and get an even 7 days. So I dare say that part of the Sabbath was to inculcate the creation story, as well as the rest and some things that we've mentioned already. We'll pick up there. When we pick up on Sunday, and I'll let y'all get a word in edgewise then on Sunday. Thanks, everybody, for your comments and attention.